Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, this is going to be an unusual show because you're hearing me live right now, of course. 2 weeks ago, we had a show on abating violence spiritually. And that show was interrupted because of technical difficulties. Last week, we had some more technical difficulties, so we played in a prior show. And now what we're doing is I am going to introduce tonight's show, but I'm going to stay listening in. And at the point where our technical difficulties began in the show from 2 weeks ago, Abating Violence Spiritually, I'm going to then finish that show live. So you're going to hear me right now live, and then you're going to hear that show played for about an hour and 13 minutes or so. And then I'm going to step in and, so to speak, finish off the show. So that will be like part two. a little bit unusual, but this is the best we could come up with of how to keep everybody in the loop. We replay the part of the show that people may not have heard. And for those of you who have heard it 2 weeks ago, it gives you a chance as a refresher to, remember what it was about. And then I'm going to go on for about at least that much time, again, talking about what I really wanted to get to, which was the main point of the show. And we really, unfortunately, because of technical problems, were unable to do that. So I'm going to sign off live for right now, and we'll continue with the show, Abating Violence Spiritually. And I'll be back live in about an hour and 13 minutes from right now. Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, another hopefully very great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and questions that may have come into people's minds today in particular, although some people will be listening to the show at a different time than December 14, 2012. Nonetheless, today there was a very violent and terrible shooting in, I believe it's called Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And that's in the United States. For those of you who, you know, are outside the United States, you probably don't know where Sandy Hook is. And so the point is that we have had a number of these kinds of things go on before. And it is something more endemic to the United States than it is to other places. And so it's something also for us to give some pause about. However, tonight's show is Abating Violence Spiritually, which hopefully will provide a, we'll say, an answer, not the only answer, to trying to deal with issues of violence. Now, I think that it's important for me to be very straight with everybody about what I'm going to be covering, because some people might have been shocked by today's events and or have even been directly affected by it. And so in any case, for the most part, I'm going to be talking about the principles and, we'll say, general concepts about what violence is and how it can be stopped using the spiritual principles and concepts that are probably the most effective means of actually stopping violence. In addition, I'm going to briefly address what specifically the children that were killed today, about 20, at least that's the present number, of children that were killed, give that information for those people who either need to hear about it or want to hear about it or just the general listenership. If you don't like that part of what I'm going to be talking about, I'll be addressing it for about 5 minutes at the end of this first section. And you don't have to listen. You know, nobody's forcing you to listen to anything I have to say about this. I realize some people are going to be more sensitive and possibly more emotional about this than I'm going to present it. Other people might be the opposite. They might say, well, why are you dealing with something that has to do with current events? Well, this is not a current event. This is an event that has deep roots going back in time and has a repetition to itself in some respects. It certainly involves issues that I've talked about in the past, which include evil and other factors. And for those of you who want to know more about those issues, you can look into the textbook I wrote, Life's Hidden Meaning, look under evil, also look into who and under what circumstances are people, persons, can best deal with those factors. I'll talk a bit about that in the show later on. Now, let me start by defining violence, because this in itself, just the definition, will clarify a lot of most people's confusion. I really believe that. So please, if this goes by too quickly for you, you can always go back and listen in a couple days when the show is up, and you can get it again, because this is probably critical to understand. Spiritually and metaphysically, probably more metaphysics in this sense than spiritual, because this is really kind of a physics issue. Violence is the following definition. Now, this definition is a definition that I have created, but it is consistent with other we'll say definitions in the general philosophy of ageless wisdom and some other allied, we'll say, metaphysical explanations. Violence, as I define it in a metaphysical sense, is the lowering and or destruction or partial destruction of a major center and sense that is in a living being. Now, if it's a human being, we have seven senses. I know that's hard to understand. Most people think of five, but there's two that are senses of only spiritual things. And those senses, if they are diminished in a way in which, now this is very important, this is part of the definition, in a way in which the amount of diminishment cannot be compensated for by the remaining sense or senses to the point where a person becomes less sensible, or putting it another way, less aware, less able to sense in general, causing and leading to oftentimes what we call mistakes, but it can also be terrible accidents and frighteningly, we'll say, more severe issues. If a person has that effect, then they've had the effect of violence on them. It's caused in a truly physical sense or physics sense by one energy going against another energy, and the way that it affects the other energy, that is the energy in this case that we're using to sense with, and the energy coming in that is information to the sense, both of are being adversely affected by the energy that is directed toward the person or towards the being. It could be animal. Animals can have violence against them, and even in plants, although a lot of people may not follow that completely. And so the violence affects the sense or senses, and if it diminishes them to the point where a person is now lost some significant amount of sense, then we say that they have had violence done upon them. However, this is a relative term. Now let me explain. I'm going to give you an example. Let's say you're a prize fighter. Okay, whew. That's not my favorite sport, but I'm going to use that as an extreme example so that you can follow what I'm saying. you're a prize fighter and you go into the ring and you're fighting another person as a matter of sport. Now, to me, that's not exactly a sport, but whatever you want to call it, that's the definition in our society, right? It is a sport to us for some reason. And even if you go back in antiquity, it was a sport in times as early as Greece and before. I mean, people have been doing this sort of stuff for a long time. Now, the point I'm trying to get at is if you've trained yourself to continue to sense by compensating with your other senses so that what would look like violence is being acted upon a center or sense within you, but if you compensate for the lack of it, until you lose that compensation, I guess until you're knocked out, one way to look at it, you're not a victim of violence. You're actually possibly a trained athlete or someone who is doing something for sport because it excites a person emotionally, and many people are excited emotionally, to lose some part of a sense that they compensate for. We actually find that exciting as human beings because it challenges our other senses. Now, there's a reason why it does that. In a spiritual sense, it does it because when we are ever challenged, we tend to grow more. And especially if we're challenged in a spiritual sense, because our spiritual senses are always involved in things, we grow that way as well. So you can grow in a physical way or an astral way or a mental way, as far as senses are concerned. But you can also grow spiritually at the same time. So I'll give you an example. Go back to our boxer, say. The boxer has trained him or herself, and the result is that in most circumstances, the boxer maintains a level of sense able to compensate for the amount of what it is energy being applied against centers in that boxer's body or bodies, actually. And so the result is they experience not a loss of sense in overall, they experience a compensation and sometimes excitement. So they actually find it fun, enjoyable in some way, to be put into this circumstance. And in a spiritual sense now, I'm not saying not all boxers are fighting for spiritual reasons, but in a spiritual sense, overcoming these losses and still having a sense of God also helps them to grow spiritually if that's what they seek to do. Now, I'm not saying it happens very often, but it does sometimes in some people. And generally in life, people follow the same thing. So if we're challenged by various quote-unquote potential violence in our life that we overcome by compensation with the other centers, balancing and helping to abate the effects of the violence, then the result, or potential violence, then the result is we grow in a sense, both physically and if we were challenged astrally and or mentally, the same thing, and we can grow in the spiritual senses because if at the same time we're thinking about creating more light or trying to create more light with our senses and attempting to do so, even though we may be doing other activities, obviously boxing would be one of them, then we are growing spiritually as well. Wow. All that was a mouthful. And I realized that may go, I've gone so fast, some people go, what is he talking about? All right, you'll get it eventually because I'm going to keep talking about other parts of this. So it will come together maybe, I hope. All right, so here we go. So we're talking about abating violence. We're not talking about eliminating violence. We're talking about abating the effects of violence, abating what would be a violent act to many people. So some people are going to be like the boxer. They're going to become more able to abate. Another thing that abates violence is going from the opposite direction. You remember I started from the physical and went to the spiritual. But you actually can go the opposite direction. That's a little more difficult. And so what you would do, a person in this case, animals, this is not going to hold true for because they don't have much spiritual sense. But people do. And so under our conscious control, we can consciously control our spiritual senses to the point when we are challenged, even though we may lose some physical, astral, or mental sense within ourselves, we, by some force being applied against us, rather than it becoming a true violence against us in a spiritual sense, we compensate first spiritually by looking at the situation and saying that this is, of course, a spiritual event, regardless of whether it's physical or otherwise. And the first thing that that person is choosing to do is to increase their level of giving and focusing on others' needs rather than their own, which is hard to do because your own senses are, to some extent, being lessened. And most people, as a personal defense, want to save themselves. But that is not necessarily the way it has to go. So if you start from the spiritual side, which is rare, and usually you have to do a thing called spiritual discipline to achieve this, you can actually rebalance your center strictly from the spiritual side. I'm not going to go into that. You can look in chapter 12 of Life's Hidden Meaning and read some of the ways that that can be done. But you can do it. It's more difficult, and it requires a thing called spiritual discipline, not physical, astral, or mental body discipline. Now, that is a preferred way, in my opinion, because it leads to a much better overall outcome, because you're starting with the more important thing first. But it isn't as fast. Spiritual change requires a greater level of time in most people until they reach what is called the middle or so, the midpoint or so, or sometimes just past point where the renunciations are, and that can occur somewhat earlier, of the third initiation. So these advanced level people, initiates, of which there are not very many on the planet, can almost instantaneously, as fast as a great athlete, rebalance their centers spiritually. But for the rest of us, you know, the rest of the people on the planet, that may not be working for us, you know. And it's a difficult thing to achieve. All right, so can it be done? Yes, absolutely. But it's not really something that everybody's going to be great at. Now, if you are doing this, you'll know what I'm talking about, so I don't probably have to explain it too much. And if you're not doing it, you may not be able to yet. So even though it's a great idea, and you should certainly be informed of it, which I'm telling you, it isn't always successful. Now, for this very reason that I just explained, only the most advanced spiritual people can completely or really fully deal with the basis or the main basis of severe violence, which has to do with evil. But we're going to get into that. We're going to deal with that. But because they can more or less instantaneously, no matter how fast the evil is trying to act in a violent way, these folks can do something quickly to deal with it. Whereas even though someone's spiritually disciplining themselves, if they aren't at that super fast level, the evil will overtake them and they won't succeed. And when I wrote about this in Licensed Meaning, that's not in Chapter 12, that's actually in an earlier chapter. But the point is that when I wrote about it, most people didn't understand what I wrote. They think I'm talking about something different than what I'm saying. But I'm trying to hopefully maybe correct that now that people do get what I'm talking about. So that's why you got to have more advanced spiritual people if they're running the show and dealing with large amounts of evil, big evil, we'll call it, you know, on a national level or something, something huge. Because it's so overwhelming and the time factor, you just don't have the time necessary to be able to deal with the kind of blitzkrieg, that's a German way of opposing the war from World War II, a method of evoking an evil response. Okay, so here's the point. Here's the point. As far as most people, and even tonight's show is concerned, the spiritual side, while being the biggie, is probably not going to be the solution for places like the United States, where violence has become too much a way of life. So we're going to get into the other elements of it and see how it can be dealt with. Now, there is one way to try and deal with this on a national level, but that would involve what I wrote about, which is you would have to have people in special positions, like a spiritual oligarchy of sorts, not to have any superpowers of, dictatorial powers, but rather powers of education and letting other people, we'll say informing others of potential evils in individual situations and more likely in group circumstances that are serious and going to adversely affect large numbers of people, not necessarily anyone on a specific or individual level, but where it could grow beyond that. That sort of thing makes sense, and I fully support that. The chances of that happening anytime in the near future are very low, because that would mean that a lot of people would recognize the concepts I'm talking about tonight. Now, you could say, oh, well, look at all the people who are listening to you. Yeah, well, there are some people listening for sure, but it's nowhere near enough to be able to change that sort of thing on a national level. I'm not even sure in a small town could you change it in that respect. So here is the point. It's going to take time before some of the solutions that I'm going to propose tonight are really going to be possible. But others will eventually, over time, actually happen, in my opinion. It's assuming we as a world survive the problems that are taking place, as an example, here in the U.S. Okay, let's move a bit further. Then, okay, so again, I'm going to restate, and I will a number of times throughout the show because this is such an important definition. Violence is a relative definition. It deals with the adverse effects from forces directed against the energies within a center or centers, and it causes enough disruption of the center's ability to sense and to process information as to lead the person in this case, or it could be a lower form of life too, lead the person into a position in which they are going to be much less sensible. They won't be able to sense as well in whatever body. It could be either the etheric physical, the astral, or the mental body that occurs in. Oftentimes it's all three, by the way. And if it's physical violence, it has to involve physical senses. If it's astral violence, it most likely does not, more often than not, it involves just astral and sometimes mental senses. So it's not a physically violent act, but it's still a violent act. Because astrally, if the senses are disrupted, it's the same kind of thing. And as an example, if you, in a spiritual sense, which is the component of violence coming through the other senses, a person loses physically their ability to cooperate and share. In the astral sense, if there's astral violence, a person loses the ability to love. Okay? And if it's mental violence, then a person loses the ability to give wisely and to understand and create truth. So those are the things that go with the effects from a sense being acted upon with violence, and the person, therefore, meaning that the person also is unable to compensate for the violence. Okay, so that gives us some ideas right off the bat about what we're dealing with. Now, when someone is in a position where they experience violence, besides compensating, as I spoke earlier, with the spiritual senses, most people can and do, to some extent, attempt to compensate with the remaining senses, depending upon how many of their senses were debilitated in some fashion by the forces of the violence. Now, some people are better doing this than others, and once a person becomes attuned to how to abate violence, they usually can do so, if it's in the non-spiritual way, fairly quickly. And so they can compensate fairly quickly. Some amount of training of their senses is necessary to accomplish this effect. If a person has already been violated and they obviously didn't compensate for it, there is a model that I'm going to propose that can be used. Some of this model recently has gotten into treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and other kinds of syndromes like that, but most of it has not. So let me try to just touch on it, and then we'll talk more about it later. And that is that in order to help somebody to do this, and we'll call it a kind of therapy, the person has to be subjected, unfortunately, to various modes of the violence in very minimal fashion, and also using techniques in psychotherapy that are called active psychotherapy. It includes things like gestalt, you may have heard that word, but there's many other kinds. And these kinds of therapy, some of them just deal with talking, like reality therapy and other things. But others even deal with actual physical things, like being hit with a pillow or something like that. Or sometimes a kind of rubber and foam paddle of some sort. These are, again, not meant to harm the person in a sense, but to directly affect some aspect of the physical nature, even though it's not meant to be as harmful as a real kind of weapon. And in other cases, it can be literally just pushing. In other words, someone pushing or someone blocking someone from being able to move in a certain way. There's lots of things you can do, but all of these involve an active psychotherapy. In some cases, they involve psychodrama, which is where others are involved. There's an interactive mode, and it also includes the astral and certainly mental bodies as well. Most of these psychotherapies always have some element of astral and mental factors to them. And they're involved for training purposes to get a person over the point where their ability to balance their centers finally abates the effects of what they're perceiving and usually is violence in force against them in some fashion. It could be anything, really. Now, sometimes the violence lives in the memory of the person, and it is not part of the environment that they're in at the moment. But the memory is reenacted, and the center can respond. Even the physical center can respond just as if it was actually being affected by real force coming from outside. But the force is actually created from inside the person's own body. And that sounds strange, doesn't it? Why would somebody create a force inside their own body to upset their physical, astral, and or mental senses? How come they would do such a nutty thing? And the reason is because the person is so afraid of it happening again, they're trying to do psychotherapy on themselves unsuccessfully. And we call this usually post-traumatic stress disorder, but there's many other kinds of conditions that are similar to that that have the same, very much the same problem. Why would we want to do therapy on ourselves? Because we're trying to correct the problem. It's not that we're trying to make it worse. We're trying to find a solution, but the person isn't skilled enough to find the solution for themselves, and so they become in a sort of neurotic way, going back over the same thoughts, the same feelings, and actually creating physical symptoms, just as if the physical thing, if it was a physical thing, happened all over again. Isn't that weird? Yeah, and it's for real. This is not, I'm speaking as a psychotherapist now. This thing happens all the time. How do I know this? Well, back in the 70s and early to mid 80s, I was practicing as a psychotherapist. I saw a lot of people. And I also directed mental health institutes where many more people saw other people as well, and I was involved in some of their treatments just from a standing back standpoint, but we would go over our cases and sometimes together. And the result is that you have an amazing, syndrome that really has yet to be fully explained. What I just told you in the last couple of minutes about this is I've never read about it in the way I explained it. But for a very long time, I taught it that way myself, and I was going to actually write a book on it at one point. And I decided at that very point in my life that I was going to instead switch my life to be doing what I'm doing right now. So I didn't do that, and I regret that to some extent, because I always thought somebody else would write it, but they haven't completely explained it yet from everything I've read. Now, maybe there's a book. There's a lot of books I haven't read, especially in this field, because I long ago left it. So the point is that could it be that there's an explanation there and I don't know about it? Yeah, it could very well be. So if you know of such a source, let me know, because I don't know about it. I just assume it still hasn't been, because I talked to so many individual practitioners over time, and none of them seem to have read about it. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't some book sitting on someone's shelf that nobody else has read, but you know, that sort of thing goes on all the time. Or very few people have read, so the message hasn't gotten out there. It takes a long time in professional media to get stuff, really, we'll say, sunken in so that people accept it, and they test it out themselves, and they say, yeah, that's true. It takes a while. You know, people, if they're practitioners, they need to see it working to know that it's for real. They'll read about it, other people say it works, but we got to really try this stuff. All right, so that being the case, now you can see how this definition that I'm explaining now came to be developed a long time ago. Before I was really metaphysical, spiritual, and that stuff, I kind of had this working model, you could call it. I didn't understand astral bodies or mental bodies, but I understood that people had emotions and that I had thoughts, mental thoughts, and I could see that all that was being connected together and that it was a mind-body connection for sure, and that the mind was definitely involved in it. And so there's all kinds of other therapies, NLP and others, that deal with some ways that people think. But the most important element appears to be that we want to get better. There's a part of us that almost fanatically will keep trying to relieve the fears that we have of a future event recurring or something similar to what was so terrible for us. And this brings about our own, we'll call it self-violent issues. All right, that being the case, we've covered that now, and you can deal with that through proper psychotherapy, although you may need a copy of this show to bring with you to your therapist, because that too many of them may even understand what you're explaining to them. And I guess you could have them try to call me. I always try to be available, and that's what it's going to take. I'll do it. But the point is that the show is available too. And so that's a way of maybe getting the message across. If you're in therapy and things haven't been working quite for you and you have a problem of this nature, think about bringing this to the attention of the doctor you're seeing, because you can get that person maybe to help you if they understand how to do that, and maybe help a lot of other people, because once this is known, it can be quite effective. All right, so how else can can we abate then, besides just going to see a shrink to have your mind dealt with in your other body? How else can you deal with it? Well, in a spiritual sense, abating violence in a bigger way needs to be addressed by the group processes involved. And we're going to get more into that in the next segment. But for right now, I'm going to do that thing I talked about, which is to describe what children, particularly under about the age of 10 or so, experience, and as they get younger, almost all of them do, when their life is suddenly cut short, and particularly in a grueling and violent way, which would certainly, I think, apply to today's situation. So, if you don't want to hear this, I'm going to go till we have the commercial, which is going to be about 5 minutes or so from right now, and then a couple of minutes after that, and you can come back and join us if you would like to. And if you want to hear this, then fine, I'm going to go over it. There's nothing terrible about what I'm going to talk about, but some people may be just so sensitive to this thing at this moment that they don't want to hear it. So that's all right. All right, so let me go on and talk about this. Most of us, when we die, experience some information, I'll call it communication, with our solar angel, before the death and soon after. Before may only be seconds, minutes, hours. Other people could be days or weeks or more. And depending upon how fast the death is moving on us. And the level of communication is based upon the needs that we have for dealing with the death. A lot of people have great fears, and the fears are lessened by a being we can call solar angel. Today, probably the best word many people use is guardian angel. But this angel is a being of enlightenment or light, and it's far beyond us in, we'll call it spiritual development. It lives in a small part in the higher mental realm, but most of its existence is higher than that. And so it can communicate with us through our mind, our mental body, and especially our higher mind. But we are fooled by this because we don't know what that means. So whatever communication we have, sometimes we will even believe it's right there in the room with us, or we're hearing things in our head, or whatever it may be. But it's not so much that as we're hearing communication through our mental senses and through the senses correspondingly stimulated by the mental senses in the lower bodies, but not the angel is not there, actually. But we would swear it is. For all intents and purposes, I guess it doesn't matter if we think it's there because it's still communicating. Remember, communication isn't us being told or forced to think a certain way. We are still the thinker. This great being gives us information, which is always helpful, I mean, because the being is not going to try to give us bad information. And its information almost is infallible. So whatever we get from it, we can conclude it's as good as we're going to get it. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but it's pretty close. By our standards, probably is perfect, because we wouldn't understand the imperfection in it if we couldn't do it. All right, so what is then the role? The role is to alleviate fear. That's number one. Number two, to give us the maximum opportunity to get the most meaning and least amount of destruction or non-meaningfulness from the experience of death, okay? And to provide what many people would consider a sense of security, not just emotionally, but in whatever sense that relies on the body that we are operating from. And so that could include various things that goes on to, oh, who knows? It could be anything you might want it to be. Now, in the case of a child, what this means is that, in a young child, that the angel does not act at all the way it acts with other people or beings. You know. What it does, basically, is it very quickly removes the child from the scene of where whatever violence was acted upon in its death, if it's a violent death. If it's the child's dying of a disease, it informs the child ahead of time of what is going to be encountered, but it also removes it from the scene very quickly, which it doesn't do with adults. And in removing it from the scene, it does not allow the child usually to stay in the etheric world, unless there are exceptions to this rule, which there are some, but most of the time, it takes the child directly, and it accompanies it, at least in the child's mind, it does, into the astral world almost immediately. Children who die of violence are seldom left in the etheric world for minutes, days, hours, whatever. They're almost immediately taken into the astral world. Where the angel simultaneously contacts a number of astral residents who are seeking, through love, the desire to have a child. And this is the only way they can have children, is to adopt them from this world, from the physical. And usually more than one may respond. And then the angel is directly involved in helping the child to decide what is best for it in terms of getting its new parents in the astral world. It's kind of a totally different kind of experience than what we would expect. And the child is almost always given a sense of security, and it is allowed to mourn as much as it seeks to mourn its losses in the astral world, but only after it has a new set of parents, which is a little strange for us to understand. But it's needed because when it does, it is given then the ability to see some things going on in the physical world from a great distance. That only takes place after it's being cared for by new parents. And this could take a little bit of time. So mourning it itself can sometimes be, delayed. And the violence that occurred in the physical world caused death, and we'll talk about that for a very distinct reason. And I'm going to go to break now, but when we come back, we will talk a bit more about this and how violence causes death and some other things about it. We will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about abating violence spiritually. That's tonight's show topic. And I did describe briefly what a young child usually experiences, which is considerably different than adults or even older children experience if they have a sudden, particularly violent death. Children that are sick may not experience the same issue if they die over a protracted period of time. It depends on the circumstances. Now, let's talk about what death actually is so that we can understand what a violent death is. Death is caused by one or more centers completely dissociating. A major center is what I'm talking about, and a major sense, in effect. When a spiritual center, which we call a chakra, stops functioning as it is designed to, which is in human beings, it is to bring in information, and that information is then received by the consciousness or self of the person, and at the same time it is transferred to the, in most cases it goes to the self, and then it's transferred to the personality for its, we'll say, decision about how to deal with the information. Personality, looking at it from that standpoint, we'll call the personality the subconscious. So you can get information subconsciously, and you can get it consciously. If the information is separated from the consciousness completely, from the self, in other words, then the person is dead. Okay, so once you have one or more centers that no longer is receiving any information, that person cannot maintain life in that body. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, isn't a center and a sense all connected to an organ? You can lose organs all the time. Yes, you can lose organs, and theoretically you can go on living without necessarily having a certain organ, although the major organs that are connected to the centers, it's very difficult to stay alive. You could, in some circumstances, particularly with modern science. But I'm not talking about an organ. I'm not talking about the question of receiving the information from other organs to compensate. I'm saying if there is zero information going into the consciousness, at that particular time, that center has another kind of connection, we'll call it, and that's with the life thread. And when the consciousness is completely dissociated, we'll call it the person no longer can maintain the vibration necessary to control the life thread. So it's a totally spiritual kind of event rather than a physiological one, as organs would presume. It's something on the order of saying when a person loses one of their centers completely, they no longer are a human. And for the protection of that person and others, human beings that lose humanness die. if that didn't happen, we would be literally inundated by, you got it, zombies. Yeah, seeing that is the phenomenon of the day, I guess, that so many people are interested in zombies is not possible because of metaphysical and spiritual principles. But the reason it isn't possible isn't because of some physical reason. It's really because of a metaphysical one and a spiritual. Metaphysical means beyond the present physical knowledge. And a spiritual one, that we're designed so that we don't stay in that body. Now, this gets to the physical. You can stay in the etheric part of the physical for a long time, up to a long time, but you will start losing consciousness to that body. But that seeps out slowly. It can take 100, 110, 120 years. And then you're a ghost by then. A ghost just means you don't have enough consciousness to know who you are, but you have enough to stay, quote-unquote, alive, so to speak. Now, here's the craziness of this whole phenomenon, is that when we have a violent death outside of the youngest people that this occurs to, humans are in etheric form for protracted periods of time, usually. Most want to, we'll say, have closure. They want to resolve what was left undone. And they may even have certain levels of anger and even want to do violence to others. So it's a kind of crazy effect that violence leads to, we'll say, unusually long experiences in the etheric world for most people that it's enacted on. But for those under 10, and especially like 5, 6, 7 years old, those luckily are protected from all that by being taken on to the next world. Now, there are rare exceptions, especially if the child was violently beaten for years of its life or something. That will cause that child to potentially become a ghost if it dies through violence. But if that isn't the case, and it's just sudden, out of no place, luckily they're protected. Now, here's the point that I'm getting at. We have different circumstances in metaphysics based upon what the issues are of the type of violence being imposed on people. And it's not cut and fast and cut hard. It's really just a relative issue. Even though you can, in general, make statements about how, if it happened a certain way, this is likely what's going to occur. All right. So most people, if they die violently, especially if they're adults, are going to spend more time, probably etherically. They may have contact with their guardian angel or solar angel. And during that time, there's going to be, we'll say, a kind of therapy, if you want to call it that, in an etheric sense, between oftentimes the angel and sometimes between a master of the angel's wisdom, which is unusual, but it happens, and sometimes between others that also recently died in the etheric world. It's very strange. I know the etheric group psychotherapy session. I have never seen one, but I imagine they could take place. At any rate, all of this is happening because the person is going to be around for weeks, possibly, in the etheric world, resolving some of their life issues, trying to get a handle on the issues, and also trying to restore as much as they can, at least in an etheric sense, of their senses, their physical, or we'll call it etheric senses, what's left of them and how to make it so that they can recover some part of it if possible. Now, you might say, why do you want to recover some part of your etheric sense if you're going on to live in the astral world? Well, actually, there's a benefit to that. If you can recover some part of it, you can actually bring that part into play, and you can make it so that, in a sense, you will become more one with natural senses, that a etheric part is enlightened. So actually, if you do some good things while you're etherically still alive, and if your focus is more out, you can actually benefit yourself once you go to the astral world and even to the mental world. So there are some benefits to this, and that's, it's not being done in some idle way for silliness' sake. It's being done for real practical reasons. And that's why the guardian or solar angel does get involved in this and encourages people to. And why sometimes the master of the ageless wisdom might get involved, particularly if it's a spiritual disciple sort of relationship. Or sometimes you find just good people that are etherically, most of them are dead, obviously, physically, around who might be of some help before they move on. It's really interesting. And yes, there are the very, very rare exceptions of people who are having etheric out-of-body experiences, and they may even find an opportunity or so to go ahead and do something that is helpful. Not to say that all people are in that space, but there's enough of them around. It could happen, and it does happen. All right. So the violence again is looked upon as something that is abated, not something that is avoided. Why can you not avoid violence? Why can't we just make the whole world a nonviolent place of some sort? And this gets into the progression of a thing called evil. And evil's methodology involves a force to be applied on its victims to gain power over the victims, and part of the power comes from, we'll say, dissociation, destruction, imbalancing of the person's centers. This is how it's done. And violence is the word that does it. That's the word you use to describe evil doing it. Not all violence is evil, but all evil uses violence in some circumstances. So violence is a primary evil thing. Now, Earth, planet we're on, right now is not a sacred planet, meaning that evil is part of our system. Worse yet, Earth is doing an experiment to see if humans can somehow get rid of evil on their own rather than using a more protracted and slow method, which eventually gets rid of evil and even prevents it from getting as bad as it has. But on Earth, that's been done away with. So we're all guinea pigs in a grand experiment that we have chosen to participate in, our souls have, in which we're seeing whether human beings on their own can get rid of evil. Like, you can't get rid of evil by getting rid of violence. And this is the part that's so hard to understand for so many people. You can only damage evil or prevent it from growing by abating violence. If you try to get rid of violence, you will get rid of freedom. And that's what evil is counting on. Okay? The only way to get rid of violence, in a true sense, is to virtually imprison people and in certain ways that prevents them from effectively being violent on one another. It can be done. It has been done in various societies from time to time. But it virtually eliminates freedom, and it makes the whole society sort of martial law or worse. And the bottom line is that when you do that, evil grows by leaps and bounds. The surest way, there's two ways, to have evil grow. And the first is to eliminate freedom or to restrict it in significant ways. And the second is to get rid of love, or wise love, I should say, of wisdom. And evil is good at trying to get people to stop doing that by making them more selfish and trying to get something for nothing, et cetera, all that kind of stuff we've talked about many times in the show. So between the two, trying to get rid of violence through martial law, et cetera, is a horrible thing if it doesn't work. Or trying to get rid of violence by giving everybody everything they desire, so in some way they won't be as violent or they will stop being violent, doesn't work either, because that's unwise giving, and it makes people more and more selfish, which causes evil to grow as well. So you just can't get rid of violence. It just doesn't work. The only thing you can do is a system of abating violence by having people change the way that their consciousness is interacting with their major centers, because that's part of the center. A major center, by definition, is a center with consciousness. There's only seven. And so that's the bottom line. It just doesn't work any other way. Now, why is it such a big deal? Why is evil the whole ballgame? Well, it isn't. I mean, violence doesn't have to come from evil. But it doesn't matter. If you try to get rid of violence, whether you're just dealing with evil or not, there is no way around it. Evil grows. You can't get rid of it. Oh, that sounds pretty disheartening to some people. I'm well aware of that. But and some people say, well, let's get rid of weapons, especially these guns. Okay. Well, yes, a gun is a convenient weapon. It can provide a more sure way to cause death than some other means, but not certainly the most sure way of killing someone. But the important point here is that it's so many steps beyond the question, and it involves so many other issues of potential freedoms, at least here in the United States, and also it has with it a false premise. What is the false premise? That in some way, the means of causing harm does away with the main cause of severe violence, which is evil. And that certainly isn't true at all. It's a kind of strange thing. Now, how do we know that this is a true statement of what I said? Well, if you look at some countries, and I'm going to name a few. In Switzerland, everybody has to own a gun. You may not know that, but that's a fact. You have to own a gun. And in Israel, almost everybody does have a gun. Now, there's a few people who don't, but almost everybody does. Okay, so we can look at these societies and say, well, how violent are they? Well, they're only a fraction of the violence in terms of use of guns than the United States. So it must not be the guns that's causing Israel. The guns must not be the cause. There's some other cause, because you wouldn't have, that's called a null hypothesis, you wouldn't have that going on then. It couldn't happen. You have a contradiction. And so basically, the only way you could really resolve this is to look at it from a different standpoint, that there's another cause in places like the United States. And the cause is that evil has almost, we'll say, three-fourths or more of its efforts focused on the United States. See, this is something that's hard to understand, again. It's evil is not some kind of just, you know, mechanical thing. It's a force created by people. People who have rejected the authority, we'll call it, and the power of God. They want to be more powerful than God. They want to have all the power possible. And they seek it at the cost of other people, because that's how evil works. It is a, we'll call it, I guess the best way to describe it is, this may not sound right, but that evil effectively is there to destroy humans so that the people who are humans and evil will have more power and control over not only other humans, but effectively, eventually, over God itself. those who understand God know that that's not, absolutely not possible. But it doesn't matter, because if you're evil, you believe it's to be true. And, of course, evil also exclaims there is no God, because that also helps it in its desire to be destructive to God. And God. And to God, life is God's growth, and human life is the first type of life that can understand its own creator. So, I mean, that's a big deal. So evil comes from humanity, and, I mean, lower life forms can be made somewhat evil, but they don't, it doesn't, it isn't not its originating source. And so we could say that evil definitely is human in its progenitor role. And the main focus, we'll call it, of where evil is moving towards, as far as the United States is concerned, is to cause the United States to lose freedom and wisegiving. And once it accomplishes that, the United States will be like a lot of other countries already have somewhat become, or are already become, and that is a bastion for more evil. And you could say, well, that kind of is contradictory, because the United States is fighting evil and it's such a good place because it has freedom and love wisdom already. How come evil can exist here at all? And the reason is that the love wisdom does not balance the freedom in the United States one way or another. In some areas, it's too much love wisdom, not enough freedom. In other areas, it's too much freedom, not enough love wisdom to balance it. And in addition, neither are at high enough levels in the existing society. And this is true only for the last 35 years or so, actually, not 35 years, that this is true of. But it's a strange thing, a strange situation. So we're a leading country, yes, but we're falling behind, in a sense, from our leading position, because evil is on the rise and is winning in its violent attitude. Therefore, we would expect, and this is what's happening, we are having more violent acts in general, because there's more darkness that leads to evil around us. Whoa. That's kind of scary. Well, listen, I want you to ponder on that. I'm going to do a brief commercial here, so to speak, for some interesting people. ActiveForever.com. They've got some local showrooms over in Scottsdale. It's over at 10799 North 90th Street. It's very far up north from where I am, but it's not far for some people. And that's how far north they are, and they're at 9299 West Olive Avenue, Suite 604. Okay, what am I telling you about? What are they doing that's Active Forever? Well, they sell some things that makes life easier for people who find some activities difficult to do. You may have a disability. That's a good place to go to if you need any help with that. Or you may just find that it's easier to do certain things with some of the products they sell. As an example, I'm sitting on one of their cushions as I talk to you right now. And I can tell you, it's the greatest cushion I've ever sat on. How do you like that? Now, that may not be a great picture, but the point is that I'm giving you some reality here. They do sell things like that, and they're inexpensive for what they do. The thing I'm sitting on right now is selling for about $23. And so it's a really good, we'll say, improvement from other, we'll say, options. And Patrick is the fellow I spoke to at this particular location. They've got several others around the valley. And you can go online if you're not in the Phoenix area. Patrick Buress, sometimes called Mr. Awesome. I know he's learning humility the strange way. But you can get a hold of them at 800-377-8033 or 480-767-6800 if you're local. And you can call them, and they're open Fridays from 7 a.m. to 5:30, Monday through Fridays, 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And check it out. It's an interesting place. I went there and I said, wow, this stuff could be helpful for my doing this show as long as I've been doing them these days. And so if you think that's the case, give them a call. All right, so now back to what I was saying. This is kind of an interesting show to be dealing with this other thing. And that is that evil is attempting, if you want to call it that, to effectively destroy all of the parts of what it is for the United States to become an enlightened country. We have never achieved enlightenment except from the forefounders, you know, the fathers, founding fathers. That was an enlightened group of folks. But we really haven't achieved enlightenment in the United States. But we have done one important thing. We have led the world into light from a darker place. We're not doing that now. And so we're in a dangerous position because we're kind of undoing what we've done before, and that leaves us much more open to violence. Our family structure has been eroded because of selfishness. So the lack of giving wisely is upon us, and it's been replaced with materials. So instead of families operating on giving wisdom and helping their children become wise givers, they're making them into selfish youngsters by giving them things, especially when they aren't responsible for getting them themselves or they aren't living up to a standard of virtue high enough to be given anything to outside of teaching and some level of restriction from behaviors which may not be enlightened. Now, that's part of the job of a teacher, and it's part of the job of a parent. Parents are supposed to be teachers of the values of life. That is diminished tremendously in our family structure, and it's diminished partly because we adults, some of us, a large proportion of us, are takers rather than givers and are more interested in getting something for nothing so than our children are. The children learn what they live, not what they're taught per se, other than what they're taught through their parents living it. So when I say teach, I don't mean you sit down with your kids and give them a lecture. I'm talking about teaching through example and teaching through explaining the example after you show the example. So you can teach in that way. That makes sense. But not until you do the example can you be an effective teacher of it. Okay. And that's a big problem, and it's probably the single biggest one in terms of where we're moving backwards in. There's many other areas I've talked about in the past, but I'm not going to go through all those today because I'm going to stick with the idea of how to specifically abate violence rather than just deal with all the reasons for its existence. You see, one of the factors here is that if we are going to abate violence, we need to do it in two different ways, individually and in a group way. And the two ways are not the same, and they're not always even complementary to each other, although most of the time they are. So this is a bigger picture today than just trying to deal with, well, you know, let's all do these 10 things and we'll maybe get better. I think we need to have a bigger picture because what's wrong is big. It's the big picture itself is wrong. And so trying to deal with it from these little slices will probably only give people a false sense that this can actually be dealt with that way. And I don't think it can. So the first issue in the big sense is to recognize that the primary cause of violence is evil. Now, that doesn't mean that all people who are violent are evil. As a matter of fact, the majority are not. The vast majority are not. Okay, at this point, I think this I'm back live. That's right. So now this is 2 weeks later, and I am picking up the show going forward. So I'll be going forward on the show from this point forward from 2 weeks ago. And we're still dealing with Abating Violence Spiritually, the same show, but we didn't get to finish it. And we will finish it today. And we're right at the middle point, in effect, because we'll be going about the same length of time now till the end of the show. And during this time, I will complete some of the concepts and add a bunch of new ideas and thoughts so that hopefully we'll have a better, more rounded way of looking at how to abate violence in a spiritual sense. And remember that this is not fully comprehensive. I mean, this show could be a week long and it probably wouldn't cover everything that needs to be covered. But it does at least give us some pause and some things to think about in ways of maybe improving the society in general that we live in here in the United States, and as a leading country, hopefully becoming a more leading country, this will affect the entire world. Now, I want to pick up where I stopped, so to speak, so that we can continue on with some level of continuity. Not everybody is evil that is violent. Certainly that's a true statement, because the number of people who are actually evil is relatively small. But evil encourages people who aren't evil to be violent. And we need to be aware of how this system works. As I said earlier, it is looking to do two things. Evil is looking to do two things, and that's to reduce freedom and creativity, which is what we call light. It's trying to reduce the light, or the first ray nature of things, if people are familiar with that word. And then at the second place, to reduce wise giving, or love wisdom, which is the second part of God's mind. The two together, when balanced, produce spirit. When they're in balance, they produce a reduction in spirit. And when they are at least growing and somewhat balanced, a society is becoming more enlightened in general and more loving in general. Again, we're talking about love in the universal and a wise sense. Wise love helps others to become more loving. Wise giving helps others to become more giving, whereas unwise makes others more selfish. So we have to be very careful when we talk about giving anything, because there's a great responsibility that what we give helps others to first and foremost become more giving, not more wealthy, not more friendly, not less violent, but more giving themselves in wise ways. It's a pay-it-forward kind of thing. All right, so it's also what souls do. So we're trying to become an enlightened soul-natured people, and at the present time, we've been going backwards. How long? Well, I suggested earlier in the show, certainly several decades, certainly since, give or take, the 70s, but it has been before that as well. The last century or so in the United States, there has been, we'll say, a lack of some elements of growth on one side or the other. And it's never been a bastion of perfection. This is a grand experiment. The founders of this country were seeking to build a nation that would eventually, and they were thinking in centuries, would eventually represent the finer, better points of God and become a nation in which the results would be manifested in all parts of the world, not just here in the United States. Most people think that the people who started the United States were basically, in some ways, only concerned with the United States, and that's not the case at all. I think they were truly great humanitarians and wise in seeing what was wrong with the world in general and trying to create a place that would be a showcase eventually, but if nothing else, at least a leading nation for other nations to see a better way of going about both governance and eventually all of the elements of an enlightened and a truly loving society. All right, so we have the basis now that evil is not trying to make everyone else evil. It's trying to, through its trickery and through its ability to not be readily seen by most people, to get people who are not necessarily evil to become violent. Now, who are some of these people that evil finds so convenient to do this with? Well, the first, not surprisingly, are those that are both mentally and, unfortunately, usually combined, emotionally ill. Interestingly, people who are strictly mentally ill are seldom violent, and people who are strictly emotionally ill are violent in ways that usually does not involve extreme acts of violence. Some types of violence, yes, but not extreme acts. It's usually those that are mentally and emotionally ill that have the greatest levels of we'll call it truly evil levels of violence, which may be destructive to life and kill people. Now, how come that's the case? What is there so different in people who have this both a mental and emotional component? Well, the first is that the mental side is that their concepts are infiltrated by evil, coming usually from an emotional or kamamanasic type of connection, and the emotional side of them is usually excessively angry, but angry in a way in which their anger is, instead of repressed as it is in a lot of emotionally ill people, it is projected and also it is acted upon to attempt to, we'll say, harm others for the purpose, many times, of release. And the release is an expression of self-destruction, but also destruction of others simultaneously. How come this happens? I'm speaking now more as a psychotherapist, or at least having been one. Here's where the bottom line comes in. It really happens because the society, us, all of us here, and particularly in the United States, has turned its back on models of treatment for people like this. It's very strange, but we tend to have models that, because of cost and because of the willingness to deal with mental illness in general as a health issue, we have found work through medicine and medical aids, as well as more or less standardized group processing of people without having to house them and without having to have very regular recurrent therapy. That works somewhat on some people with emotional problems and somewhat on some people with purely mental problems. It is relatively ineffective in people who have both. So our society has chosen this mostly because of selfishness. Now, that's part of the evil model. Remember that. The selfish part deals with the love, the wrong kind of giving, and this is wrong kind of giving. And then we further don't want to be encumbered by people who have relatively severe mental / emotional problems. And we instead want to basically throw them out as people. Well, you can't do that. We've thrown them out of the mental institutions and closed most of them. County hospitals only see them for a very brief period of time. And most insurance companies turn their back on any model that would be effective with them, that because those models usually require more than 15, 20, 25 sessions. And so they won't deal with it because of cost. Well, now you've got a real problem, because where do these people head off to? And there is a few and far between solutions. So these people are the one of the ways that evil can enact its regime of being violent. And in the United States in particular, evil is focusing as much as 75% of its attention on the United States, because if it can finish the United States, it's got the planet. That's right. So it figures, well, why go after the rest of the world? There's plenty of countries that already have plenty of evil in them already. But evil, as I'm discussing it, is coming from a source that's in the astral world. It's called the eighth sphere. And these are people who have died but given up their soul for the most part. A few may still have a soul, but they don't pay much attention to it. And they tend to possess people. Now, they possess people in the physical world who are evil, and they possess people who are easily possessable. And the most easily possessed person that I know is a person with a severe mental and emotional problem combined. Now, that is why we're seeing violence of the magnitude we're seeing, using weapons that are definitely, the purpose is to kill. And so this is why we are presently inundated. Now, you could say, well, let's just take all the weapons away. We'll prevent these mentally ill people from getting them. Wouldn't that be helpful, too? Well, there is a part of the law that says if you're mentally ill, you can't buy a gun. Problem there is that they ask you the question, and you go to buy the gun. And you see, mentally ill people may be truly murderers, and they may truly be crazier than a loon, but they're not crazy enough to answer that question yes. That's the problem. So they don't answer the question yes, and therefore, unless they have been diagnosed and in some database as such, there's no way of knowing so. And since we no longer treat these people, and there are literally over a million of them running around, it's only a matter of time before they have relatively easy access to guns and other kinds of weapons. Bombs are possible, poisons, all kinds of things are possible. So there's a whole gamut of ways that people with these problems would be able to get a weapon. Just by banning it to people with the problem, it won't work. Well, okay, why don't we get rid of all guns? You know, even though it's in the Constitution, that we shouldn't do that, and we can't do that because the forefathers, they said, well, if you get rid of all weapons, the government will have an easier time becoming a dictatorship, and that's not a good thing. Now, you might disagree with that and think that they really wanted us all to become hunters, but that's not what the reasoning is. I suggest you read the Federalist Papers and the actual discussion they had about the Second Amendment. It's clear as day there. Unfortunately, those were not admitted into certain arguments that were put before the Supreme Court. And that's why we don't understand what the intent of the Second Amendment was. So we have some very, very strange, we'll say, ideas about guns. Like the reason we're supposed to be able to buy a gun is so that hunters and sportsmen among us can go out and shoot things. That's not the idea. Now, granted, the Second Amendment was worded in a way which is a little odd, and it's just the way people spoke at the time, not meant to confuse us today, but unfortunately, that's just the way it is. All right, so if the Second Amendment is there to preserve the government and prevent it from being easily taken over by a dictatorship or by a group of dictators called tyrannical rule, then evil certainly wants to get rid of that, because one of its plans, which I'm going to talk about later, is to do that. You certainly get rid of the United States in principle if it's tyrannical and or a dictatorship. You could technically have a benevolent dictatorship, but it would still get rid of the United States. And you could technically not have a dictatorship, but be tyrannical, and it would still get rid of the United States. All right, so getting to the point, our first concern should be how to deal with mental health, because it's the first place that most of these mass murderers are coming from. And there are many more out there waiting in the wings. It's not going to stop. We need to do something about mental health. And there are several ways. Now, Wayne LaFiere, the guy that's the head of the president of the National Rifle Association, I don't know if he's been president pretty much all along, but the point is he came up with some stuff a week ago. And he said, well, we really should put armed guards in schools and stuff like that. That doesn't exactly deal with the nature of the problem. He did mention mental health, but the problem is that he doesn't have a good enough understanding. And what he needed to say was something of this nature. Instead of armed guards in the schools, which is kind of, there's real problems with that. Although it could be done in the, right here where I'm talking from in Arizona, the sheriff in Maricopa County, which is the county I'm talking from, is going to put volunteer guards, so to speak, that are deputies, so they're legal deputy sheriffs, in and around schools. He's going to do it in about 50 schools. I think it's not a bad idea at the present moment because we don't have a better solution, but I'm going to give you one. The better solution is this. Particularly if I was Wayne, and I can't put words in his mouth, but I would like to be him for a few minutes, I would say, look it. Let us step forward. We'll give 10% of all of our dues, all the money that's ever given to us. Maybe we'll get more by doing this too, and we'll give 10% of that too, to a system of mental health care that will help people. Number one, recognize that there are mental and emotional problems together that cause people to become extremely violent and possessed by evil. Yes, I would use the E word, evil. He did, too, by the way. And because there is such a thing as evil, we have to take note of it. And we recognize this is like a war we're in with evil. And that way to fight that war is for people to be much more cognizant of the dangers of people who have a violent, we'll say, side to them, or at least a very angry side, and have a severe mental problem at the same time. Those people need to be immediately treated, and so we're going to use 10% of our dues to open up in all kinds of places little clinics where people can go and where they can get treated with therapies that are appropriate for them and even get medications if they need that are appropriate for them. And they don't have to have insurance. They don't have anything. And no, it's not going to be part of Obama's health care plan. It's going to be the NRA, mental health care plan, to control violence through guns, but also in other ways as well. And this is our first step. We're hoping that other people will follow, other organizations will follow, because right now we need to do this. In the long run, we need generalized better treatment of mentally ill, emotionally ill, and all kinds of mental, emotionally ill people separated as well as other kinds of factors, which I'm going to get into again. But we're going to do this. We're doing this because this is our way of providing public service for something we believe in. And no, we're not going to agree to banning guns or even limiting the use of guns, because that's a slippery slope, and even if you think it's really not that much of an affront to other people to limit their number of bullets they can buy or whatever, or that they have to register. The reason you don't want guns registered is because that's the first step for the government taking them away. And if you're a tyrant or a dictator, the first thing you do is remove all guns from everybody, because then they can't fight you. And you don't have to worry about it. They don't like that. The tyrants and dictators, they don't like to have to worry about people having guns. So that's the bad thing to do. All right. At any rate, the bottom line here is that it's a reasonable approach. Now, why would this have probably worked in comparison to what you suggested, more a hostile attack on the media and other people? Yeah, the media is generally extremely in the camp of wanting to get rid of guns. But the media is run by mostly folks who are what is known as social progressives. Now, what's a social progressive? It's a person who, because of their belief in thought, and particularly mental thinking, that they have answers to social problems that they can force on other people and believe they have a right to, because their answers are better than the masses' answers. And they attempt to have an agenda to try to regulate the thought of other people, and that's not good when it's partly in the media that this takes place. It's found a lot in college campuses. A lot of the media folks who are into news, but sometimes into other parts of the media. And it's also found, unfortunately, strongly in the left side, more towards socialism, of politics. That's generally where you find people who have that kind of belief system. It comes mostly from egotism. And we are in the midst of an explosion in egotism in the last 100 years or so. So this is where progressivism has developed. It really started before the Civil War, but it gradually grew and grew and grew. And they tried to create some utopian societies based upon progressivism. It worked too well. And they got rid of alcohol, and they tried to do other things. Some people say, well, they got the vote for the woman, you know, for women. Yeah, kind of. That's a much more complicated thing than that. But regardless, and women should certainly have a vote. And women tend to support progressive movements that are sometimes called popularism more than that. But unfortunately, if you look at the side of the dark side, and particularly evil, it loves socially progressivism, because the majority of social progressives are agnostic at best, and most of them are atheists. Atheists are not bad people, and they don't have to be social progressives either. But they go together a lot closer, because, again, this tendency to think that they understand better than others who believe in God, that there isn't any God. So they got it connected for themselves. I won't get into too much more about that tonight, but I think the point is that evil really wants people to believe there is no God, because that's the easiest way for it to win. And because then it puts us down to becoming animals, and it's a lot easier to hurt animals than it is to hurt humans. And no kidding, evil is looking to hurt. So here we go. Now, we've got this thing, and if we just started with this one premise, it would have helped. Now, does that mean that Wayne and the NRA are not it's not possible for them to come out with this? It is. I think they damaged themselves with what their tenor was. It was in the wrong way and at the wrong time. But I don't know. Maybe someone who's familiar with and close to the NRA will bring this up to them and say, hey, some guy came on the radio. What about doing this? It would be helpful. Now, are only people who are mentally and emotionally ill really the danger? No. There's others. And let me go into some of the others. People who are radically infused usually with both arrogance, beyond egotism, and with, we'll call it, philosophies of violence, are dangerous as well. I call them communists, different than socialists. Socialists want to politically change things, and they believe in using some degree of forces, but not physical force, usually. Whereas communists believe the physical force is absolutely necessary. Okay, so, yeah, when you get into political motivations and people that are into that spectrum, and then on the other side, there are some people who are, we'll call them extreme anarchists. They may not be communists because they reject all form of political nature, but they may be equally as violent sometimes. But much more so if in pure numbers in communism than in anarchists. So you have this this whole bastion then, greater than the number of people who are mentally and emotionally ill, who are potentially victims, so to speak, of the dark side. And if they can be possessed, then they can get them to do it. The problem is possession. Possession takes a tremendous amount of effort on the part of evil to do anything, to get people to kill someone. It's a really big deal. And it's like maybe dozens of times easier to get a mentally, emotionally ill person to kill someone than someone who's a communist. Even though the communist actually will be more vociferous about their position, they're less likely to take the action that's needed by possession in most cases. You don't have to be possessed to kill people, but it sure helps. And it's much more likely you're going to still see most of these people that do this sort of thing to be more in the mental health situation than in the political one. But it's still a possibility. So that's a group that we have to be concerned about, because that group has already stated that they believe in violence to achieve the goal. So that's a... when someone says that, I take them at their word. So, and you should too, if you are being cautious and you want to make a difference. So how do you deal with that? Let's say that, so should we say if you're a communist and you espouse violence, that you shouldn't be able to buy a gun? It's an interesting idea. Interestingly, it's kind of the opposite, because most communists are in favor of gun control because they want the government to be taken over by a dictator who is a communist. Tell me that isn't upside down and backwards, but that's true. So here you have something that is contradictory in its very thought nature, that is a part of the plan, politically speaking, of a group, a large group, who could be the very people who enact violence. Wow. Isn't that a weird thing? It's also likely that people who are communists will use more weapons of mass destruction or semi-mass destruction than will a mentally ill person. Why is that? Because the mentally ill person is not trying to change a political system. They're just trying to release their anger and frustration. And through possession, they see this as a means of doing it, which is completely wrong, but they're being whispered in their ears by the possessing entities, which are evil. What with the communists, they want, and others, it could be, as I said, anarchists and others, who want to change the political system through even killing more than just a few people. They want to do biggies, thinking that that will bring about even faster change. More likely, freedom will be restricted. And in that process, guns will be confiscated, and maybe bombs or the things you make bombs out of or whatever they use as a means of destruction could end up reducing the freedom considerably of all of us. That's how it works. So how in the heck are we going to change that? I mean, that's like, whoa. Well, the answer is people don't just wake up one day and say, gee, I believe in violence as a means of overthrowing the government. They don't just come out with that by magic. Where do they get these ideas from? From institutions of higher education predominantly, and then secondly, supported by certain media outlets. Wow. Is that not weird? So maybe Wayne Lafayette was not all that off base when he said the media is really against guns. Yeah, and maybe they have ulterior motives if they're also very far left. So you can see that there is some connection to this. But how do you stop it? Well, you stop it by having taking charge of public institutions. You can't do that, and I don't believe in doing this for private institutions. For public institutions, must have a equal value system of teaching public. Anything that takes public monies, especially on a state or federal level, those institutions need to carry through in their teaching by presenting an equality of ideas. It doesn't have to be that a teacher is, you know, banned from teaching one thing or another. They just have to present all viewpoints, and they need to do so in some way that does not try to brainwash their students into a specific means of, we'll call it, understanding. Now, why would that work? Shouldn't we stop teaching communism? No. I think everybody should be taught what it is, how it works, what the results are, how many countries have succeeded in their economies with communism? Zero. How many countries have had violent revolutions to establish communism? All. How many countries have survived very long, like for more than three generations, with communism? None. You see, so you start getting into these kinds of things, and people start saying, oh, you know, this is kind of it's not the best system. It doesn't work. So they don't believe in God. Yeah, we got that. They want to overthrow governments by using violence. Yeah, we got that. And they believe in giving to people in unwise ways, called social justice, so that they become more and more lazy and more selfish and eventually enslaved. Okay, that doesn't seem to work either. So you start seeing this, and that's good to teach to people. And those are the facts I give you. Now, if you can teach your opinion, you can say, I am a communist. And I'm going to tell you right up front, I am a communist. Fine, tell people you're a communist. Maybe they'll follow you. You know? But if the curriculum has a wide girth of, we'll say, all different kinds of theories of economy and government tied together, people can choose for themselves. The problem is, in a lot of universities, and particularly, strange as it seems, publicly supported ones, socialism is taught tremendously, and communism is only slightly behind that. Now, socialism is an also failed system for large countries. It can work in very small countries that are highly democratic, and the people have usually spiritual values and believe in God. It doesn't work in countries where people are mostly atheists and where there's a large number of people, like over 5 to 10 million. So, and I won't go into all the reasons for that, but there's a lot of good ones. So, ultimately, if all this knowledge is really imparted in a free fashion, we will get rid of most of the problems that we have with communism being a form of violence, and it's going to get much worse in the United States, I predict, in the next few years. There's a vast number of communists presently in our government, and the Obama administration in the federal government is just almost completely that way. So you need to be aware that that's who's running the show right now. Not a good idea. Now, it is true that 50%+ of people voted for him in the last election. Well, that's not uncommon. So it is a problem because the enticing element of social justice is that people are believe that it is a good thing to take from those who have and give it to those who have usually not created much at all and certainly our have-nots. Wow. What else should we be doing in terms of the system? Well, besides what I just said, we need to change government in general. We need to start electing people who don't follow these ways that I'm describing, and instead have within them, we'll say, a process or a method to find diversity and to be open-minded. Now, how difficult is that to do? Well, we don't tend to want to do that. I don't know why. That's the way the country is at the present time. Polarization seems to be almost a fanatical way of structuring things. Now, if we continue down this road, we are going to be bankrupt. Our economy is going to crash. Unemployment is going to be double to triple what it is today. And I'm talking just in the next 2 or 3 years. I'm not talking about 20 years from now. And we're also going to have violence, lots of violence. So what we think of today as being a violent country is going to be nothing of what's coming. In addition, the abundance of rules and regulations from a federal standpoint and from some states are meant to imprison and to enslave people and to destroy economies. Okay, so we have to be careful because the dark side and evil is seeking to destroy the economy of the United States, because without an economy, we can't lead anybody. And there's much greater possibility that violence will tremendously increase as the standard of living drops, as it has already by 10%, but it will drop way further, another 20, 30%, like I said, in 2 or 3 years, it's like 10% a year now. So we're looking at some severe problems, and it's all coming because of regulation first, believe it or not, restriction of freedom, and by taxation, which will be a major part of the equation. And finally, in the end, inflation. Yeah. Because we print more and more money that is not backed up by wealth. And we're also removing from our society those that create wealth. Now, how do we remove them? They're still here, aren't they? We remove their means of being creative by regulation and by weakening the money so that they can't do anything, and those people are going to be possibly leaving. And if they don't leave the country, they will be leaving in heart, if not in body. So it's a bad thing, and it's not going to help to have the people who were the most creative not creating anymore. And if you don't understand what that means, read Ayn Rand. She wrote some interesting novels. Probably the best one, but long, is Atlas Shrugged. And you can also watch 2 of the 3 parts of the book that she wrote, a movie, so that you can just read the third part of the book and see the 2 movies and kind of get a gist of what it's about. And that may be easiest for some people. Otherwise, it's 1,100 pages of a lot of reading. But it's a great book because it tells you exactly where we're headed. Although it was about the perspective was from the 1950s, although it was supposedly about this time. So it's kind of interesting. All right, so when we have these kinds of serious issues, there are needed to be more extreme, I'll call it, solutions. The solutions so far I've talked about are on a group level. We cannot solve these things as individuals, because to do so, most people would have to become so advanced spiritually to solve it that we've got very, very few people at that level. That's what I was talking about at the beginning of the show 2 weeks ago. And so you cannot, and tonight's show as well, of course, we repeat it, you cannot solve it on an individual spiritual level, but everybody should try to do that, become more spiritual, while they're working together with others, because the combining through the group effort of people being spiritual will solve the problem. That's why tonight's show is called Abating Violence Spiritually, even though individuals cannot do it that way, for the most part. We need to do it together rather than apart. And tonight's show is trying to draw some attention to the areas that are possible. where we can make a difference. Now, I already talked about the family structure being a real problem because families have taken on a means of we'll call it permissiveness, somewhat caused by a lack of spiritual direction. If the family is not given an opportunity to become spiritual, and I'm talking about children now, because the parents are maybe social progressives, maybe they have some element of religion in their life, then that aren't really spiritual. Some people go to church. They go to church maybe once, twice a week. They may do a lot of things that that church asks them to do, including tithing 10% of their income or more. But at the same time, the spiritual principles that may be part of that religion are not imbued into their family life. Their children are still more conscious of the material side of existence, and their life may be directed about materialism to a large extent instead of spiritual and, we'll call it, God importance. Okay, so this is probably a biggie that each person can do with possibly their spouse and do it through their family. We'll call it their first line of group work. And then try to do it with other families that are doing the same thing. I encourage all different sects of faith to encourage the people in their faith to start forming family groups of spiritual foundation, where they work together to make their families more spiritual by a collective way of helping each other to do so. It's so hard to see the things that we're doing that aren't spiritual when it's inside us and it's an extension of it, our families. But when other families are involved together, each can help the other, at least see the other's issues. It's sort of like a group therapy approach to family development in a spiritual way. This is a way to help bring about the raising of children. And then, at the same time, get your kids out of schools that don't allow anything spiritual to exist. It may be all the public schools, I don't know, but you don't have to send your kids to public schools. There are charter schools throughout the whole nation now, or most of the states in the nation, and you have options there. There are other kinds of private schools. There is homeschooling. And if this group of parents got together, they could start their own group school, which would be like home parenting, that they may each parent may contribute something they have a better understanding of at a certain time to teach all the kids. What an interesting idea. It's sort of like an ad hoc school coming from all the parents. Let's say you have 30 families. Each family has one or two parents, right, who can each maybe teach something that the other parents don't understand as much about. Now, some may be better teachers than others. That may be true. But even then, each can help the other. This is not a bad system. And then the kids themselves, students, could help each other, too. I found that to be a great model for having to have children teach each other to learn. I used it in the classrooms that I taught, and it worked. So I suggest this strongly as a possible thought, a possible means. Now, these are kind of radical ideas. I don't know too many religious groups that do this because they want so much to control it themselves that they structure it through and in, quote-unquote, the church or wherever you're going to, instead of being something that's just an adjunct, but still more, we'll say, semi-secular in respect. It's supporting spiritual, but not necessarily a specific religious belief, even though you can still have that as part of your understanding. It doesn't mean you can't. But it goes so much bigger. It grows so much bigger. It gives young people the big picture and allows them to operate outside of the threats and problems of their individual family. And if their individual family has certain areas of what we call materialism, it allows the young people to grow beyond it because they see it from a bigger perspective, and they notice it, they'll probably become the more active parties to making a change about it. Okay, does it sound crazy? Has it happened before? Not that I'm familiar with. I could believe that someone's tried it before. I don't know. But it's worth a shot because we need to do something quick. How long do we have? Less than 4 years, for sure. I'm telling you, really, the next 2 years are really going to be serious problems. So, I mean, we've got to do something right away. I mean, and please don't think that these are idle words, and I'm just saying, oh, well, you know, don't worry. You can do anything you want. We'll still be here 20 years from now. I don't think we will be. The United States, as we know it, maybe they'll still call it the United States. I don't think they will, actually. But will not exist as we know it. And I'm pretty sure of that if we continue just as things are continuing to go. All right, so what else can we do to abate violence then? Well, we've gotten a lot, because if you change young children, you change very young adults and very old, we'll say, teenagers, who are in advanced education, and if you pull some kids out of the public school system, that's a good thing, in most public school systems, but not all. I mean, it could be good public schools. It doesn't mean there has to be only private or semi-private schools. But just doing those things is a big, big change, because that's who's going to be taken over. I mean, let's face it, the young eventually become the future leaders, the future everything, right? All right, then we also have the mental health issues and take care of them. We need to change our political ways of operating, and that could be done by just who you vote for. How simple is that? Okay, but you won't realize in the last election, 3 million people that were Republicans, over three, I think it was 3.5 million is what I read, but didn't vote. They voted in a way for McCain. Granted, Romney could have done a better job, but man, that's a strange thing. There was some committee called the Orca Committee in the Republican Party that was supposed to get out the vote. I don't think they did their job. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans had it all together. I think they, for the most part, had it not together. But what we ended up with is going to be a lot worse than what we might have had. Not to say that there aren't some things that probably weren't going to be all that terrific either way. But not voting, I think, was not the best solution for those who didn't. But what can I say? They chose that. So what I am saying, I'd rather everybody vote. Even if you all go out and vote for the most communistic folks, it's better that everybody votes. Because more people take responsibility, therefore, for what eventually is going to come to pass. Instead of saying, well, I didn't vote, so I didn't bring this about. Of course, not voting is probably the biggest way to bring about a severe and drastic negative effect. So voting is good in the long term. I may not like the way that the country votes, but I'd rather everybody vote than not, believe me. All right, so getting to the final. Now, in jest, I've sometimes said, don't vote if you're going to vote for Obama. I was kidding, of course. But the point is that if you really, really believe that voting is important, that's the most important thing. So that's a big factor. And it wears on, it lets other people realize that it's part of the responsibility. We're all part of it, at least until the country is taken over by a dictator. All right, so what else can we do, then, is an important aspect to this whole solution. Well, we need to be safeguarding the Constitution. Right now, it's being eroded almost daily by executive orders and administrative rulings that have no protections by law. The present method of running the country is to have no congressional budget, no congressional control, no congressional anything. And effectively, that's giving up the country to, quote-unquote, dictatorship. Certainly to tyranny in the long run, too. Is going to, in order to have this situation change, it requires that people make some, we'll say, more radical changes in the, what they consider to be an acceptable way of voting for people who are more open-minded but not necessarily have exactly the same viewpoints, particularly in terms of social agendas. You heard me say that the people with social agendas that are contrary to God are bad. The people who refuse to accept any of the viewpoints of people with social agendas different from them are worse. Are worse. Because it leads to a sense in others of there being no open-mindedness, and it leads to a struggle against ideas themselves. So this is not a good place to be. We can change this. We don't have to live this way, folks. We really don't. The United States is becoming more and more irrelevant. The present administration is removing the United States from being a world leader because the dark side wants that. Remember that. Almost everything that's happening is happening because of some form in its expression of evil. We are the target. And if you don't believe that, you will eventually. You'll have no choice. But if you don't believe it and you, if you haven't believed it and you're changing your mind, maybe by listening to the show or reading something I've written or something someone else has said or done, then please do something to counter the fact that you, for years, may have had a mistaken viewpoint. Make it your, we'll say, karma to go do something before it's too late. Because once it's too late, it's too late. You know, and then what are we going to do about it? All right. Let me talk for a minute about this question of the violent aspects and how we abate them. We can't get rid of violence, but we can abate the effects of violence so that when violence occurs, we have a different approach than the present one. These are some of the things that I suggest. Without changing the rest of the country, including the media, including all the other things that are happening, when a violent circumstance arises that particularly peaks in a person's, we'll say, astral nature, and this is happening, if you have 30 people killed within maybe 30 minutes, it's a big deal. If it's in a school and 20 of them are children, big deal. So what you're going to do in that kind of circumstance to abate violence within yourself and those you come in contact with, which could be a large number of people depending upon who you are, is to be open in discussing your feelings about it, your thoughts about it, and some of the ideas from this show and other places that you think are relevant and that apply. Now, you may think everything I said is irrelevant, and don't use this show. I mean, okay, tell you that. But I'm suggesting this as an alternative than to be quiet or silent, or being just emotionally distressed and expressing that, or by seeking some knee-jerk reaction, let's take all guns away, or let's take all the bullets away, or let's put in armed guards in every place we can and do everything we can to stop people from ever doing this or that again. All of those knee-jerk kind of reactions are part of the problem. They aren't in any way a solution. They lead to greater levels of evil. Greater levels. If you want people to stop killing other people, doing any kind of severe violence, you got to stop evil to some extent. You're not going to get rid of it, but you got to abate it. And abating it starts in yourself, and then in those you communicate with, friends, family, loved ones, enemies, maybe, I don't know. Everyone you communicate with, you attempt to let them gain some concepts and wisdom from your own expressions of the situation. They can include remorse. They can include grieving and mourning. They can include all the elements of being who we are, which are human beings. And they should not be strictly an intellectual paradigm of some show like this one. They need to include all the things that you feel and think, but how best to deal with those feelings and thoughts, not just some expression like a vomit onto the scene, which only worsens the problem and makes it grow. That's kind of what was happening in the media in a large extent. Not every place, not all the time, but I would say a majority of the time. And that's not good. So, you know, it's like, gee, maybe we could get more commercials if we just really build this case up or say this kind of thing or bring more attention here. And, just wrong motives all the way around. All right, so what else is really the foundation, you could say, of solution? The final solution is to get this country to consciously seek to be a leading nation. Consciously seek to be a leading nation for enlightenment and good. That's the bottom line on a nationalized scale. You can't do it for the world, and you can barely do it for almost any country. And to do it for the United States is a huge effort, but it is the bottom line of where we need to be. It sounds almost impossible from our present standpoint, because, again, the present position of the administration in the United States that is controlling things is to remove us as the leading nation, much less enlighten anybody. And it is putting out the light in numerous ways, too many always to talk about. And it is causing a almost xenophobic attitude of doing anything for or with any country who is also trying to bring light into the world. Consequently, you see some terrible results in terms of our relationship with Israel, some of our other quote-unquote allies, and most importantly, it has eroded the soul of our country. What does it mean to have a soul in a country? I mean, humans are individuals, they have individual souls, so how does a country have a soul? Well, the way to look at it, in my way of saying it, is that the soul of the country is the totality of all the ways that the country has produced enlightenment and is, and all the ways that the country has given wisely and still is. That is the soul at the present time. You are as spiritual as you are functioning as a spiritual being at that time. Souls aren't based upon their past. They're based upon the past added with the present and how they're moving into the future. And so that's who we are as a soul in a national sense. And difficult for us to picture because few people think that we have a soul nature. Now, I'm going to tell you some esoteric stuff. Please bear with me. The United States has a soul. The soul of the United States is along a certain kind of ray called the second ray. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means the United States as a soul is supposed to enlighten the world and supposed to wisely give to the world in one very big, general, specific way, and that's through education and givingness that comes from some elements of sacrifice and some elements of, we'll say, a focused viewpoint that God exists. That's what it's supposed to do. Why did I say that? Those two things? Because our personal nature is more the sixth type of energy expression, which is the last things I said, which is to give in ways that involves a certain level of sacrifice that deals with God and that lets others know that there really is a God. Now, for a lot of people that are atheists or at least agnostic, they may really find offense with what I just said. But that's the metaphysical truth, as I understand it, of how the United States was created. It was created along the sixth way personally, and the second way to eventually function as a soul. Have we ever functioned as a soul? A couple of times, for brief times, historically. We did so for several years during World War II. We did so during the last year or two during the Civil War, and we did so, unfortunately, these are wars, but this is the truth, and we did so through the every year except the first year during the Revolutionary War. So during wars, we've had some amazing elements of soul function. The Revolutionary War, the soul function was very limited in comparison to the soul function, say, in World War II, because our soul has grown in that respect. Now, the soul nature, again, is not to just, a lot of people, I brought up wars, which a lot of people say, well, that's violence in the third way. No, the ultimate goal is to be destructive to the other side that you're fighting from, but to eventually bring to a higher level of consciousness the other side. And the proof of this is, in each of the cases, I'm going to go right through them, during the Revolutionary War, our greatest all-time ally eventually became the people we fought, which is Great Britain. Now, you might say, well, wait a second, didn't we have a war with them in 1812? Yeah, it lasted like 6 or 8 months. No big deal. It was a kind of strange war. It was based upon more theoretical things, although they were taking people off of our ships and enslaving them, so I guess it could be important. But it was really based upon some economic things that were going on. And then we got over it pretty quick. The people we fought against in the Civil War with each other, in effect, we tried many ways to heal the nation and to bring it back together. Again, oddly, through the second way. This may sound so strange, but it's a true statement, even if you don't want to believe it. Even if you're... Most black people do not want to believe that's true, but it is. And we've learned greatly, and the consciousness has grown greatly, mostly through the efforts of black people. We are not a nation of blacks and whites anymore, even though black people want to believe that in fairly large numbers. We are a nation truly of one, we'll call it, soul. There's not a black-souled nation and a white-souled nation or yellow or any other, but there's a nation that has grown. But most of it didn't grow until after the Civil Rights Revolution leading all the way into the mid-70s. So it took that much time for us to gain it, well over 100 years after the end of the Civil War. That's why there's animosity about it and other things, but it's over. Now, you could say, well, there's still discrimination here or there. Yeah, there's always going to be some discrimination someplace. But not in general. Mm-mm. No, it's way different. The things that are wrong have to do with the fact that we are giving up our soul. Not that we didn't develop it. Remember, you're only as spiritual as you are functioning at the moment. We developed some great things at great cost, but we're giving it up. Think about that. Remember what I said. Okay, so, and then what about World War II? Well, it turns out that we blew the bad guys, the kingdom come. We really did some terrible kinds of things, in a sense, between the super bombardment bombings of Germany and its allies, as well as Japan with every kind of bomb in existence and then nuclear finishing them all, they became great allies, and we helped them. And that's a second-rate approach. You need to understand, that's not a third-rate approach. That's a second-rate approach. And why do we do this? Because it's our soul nature. Now, have we been souls at other times, too? Yes. Any time there has been a disaster at some place in the world, any time there has been some kind of grave misfortune, we're there. We have been in the past. Not so much now. We're not even helping our own people now. So you see, what's going on is the soul is leaving us. And without our soul, I don't care what else we do, we're just not going to make it. It makes me very sad because we have had such great potential and at times have done remarkable things. And at times we've done terrible things. But now, we're doing the most terrible thing of all. We're destroying our soul. Be aware of what I'm saying, because this is evil taking place right here, right now. Evil seeks to destroy souls as it seeks to destroy God. It disrupts and eventually destroys life. And it seeks to do so again by destroying freedom and wise giving, and substituting restrictions and rules and tyranny for the freedom, and taking away and removing almost all creativity or possibilities of it through rules and restrictions. And it does so by getting rid of wise giving, by giving unwisely, not by preventing people who are wise from giving, but by taking all of their resources that they might give and giving it unwisely, others, and a thing called social justice is part of that system. It's also part of communism. So ultimately, when we look at how we're functioning, we are on the road to destruction for sure. Can we get out of this? Can we make it better? Sure. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that we're resilient. When we've come down these roads before as a nation, the United States has beaten off evil. Even internally, it has done it before. But I have to tell you, this is a time when it may be true that we don't do it. If there's ever been a time since at least the Civil War, this is it. And there may be a civil war. So you got to look at this from a standpoint that we are in grave, grave jeopardy from a lot of things that I've brought up tonight. And it's really, its foundation, what it's using to get to us is violence. It is a true ally of evil. Even when it's not evil, it's an ally. And it's through violence that we will see most of these things accomplished. Remember, violence can be accomplished just by the government taking away all the abilities for people to create, taking away the rights of people that they have supposedly in the Constitution, taking away the ability to govern through our representatives. Those are all a form of violence because over time it erodes our senses and prevents us from being able to not only be informed, it prevents us from even taking any kind of meaningful action. All right, so if we're going to make a final, we'll say, plea, if we're going to do what is the ultimate, saving our soul nature could be the whole banana. And the soul nature, again, is the wise-giving nature of this wonderful country and preserving that in a way in the face of all of what's coming, which is going to include great levels of physical discomfort and loss of standard of living, tremendous levels of obstruction of most of our creative efforts, and eventually, almost every right that we have literally over a couple of hundred years, effectively, fought so hard to get to. We fought long before there was the United States. We fought to try to get freedom. Throughout the mid part of the 17th century, we started. And certainly past the end part of the 17th century, that's where it was manifesting. And you can say, well, gee, now we've come way over 200 years. And all of those efforts, all of those sacrifices, all of the countless human beings who have gone through this, how could we lose our soul today? Because the soul is not based upon what it has done. The soul is based upon what it is doing now, which leads us into the future. And we're just not doing it. We're not. Now, I hope that some of tonight's show has really given you the, let's say, impetus and some of the ways that we can make a difference. I would love to hear from you all. Send me emails or however you want to communicate. And I would like to talk more about this because, again, on an individual level, this is too big. This is too hard for any but the fewest of people to do much of anything. It's big. There's also things I didn't really get into, like the lawlessness. There's huge amounts of corruption in courts and court systems in various states. There's corruption in various industries. There's corruption, certainly, in some unions. There's corruption in numerous ways that is also destroying the very nature of our soul and denying us what I think rightfully should be what we demand to become. So it is within the nature of this country to fight and to fight correctly without violence. But when we are fighting evil, we do need to evoke and to provoke sometimes a violent issue. Because evil in itself, by being violent, sometimes requires a violent response. Unfortunately, that's a truism in the physical world. It is not part of the astral world. In the astral world, they need to be confined and allowed to destroy themselves. But in the physical world, as I wrote about in Life and Meaning, it requires sometimes physical force, which does become violent against those who are evil because they themselves are using violence. Remember that, because some people are completely pacifistic and believe that is the way they should be. We can have a discussion about that if you believe that. And if you're a Quaker and you think, well, all forms of violence are wrong, we can talk about it. There's different ways of looking at it, and some of them make sense and some of them don't. And, I can see all kinds of ways to find a solution to those kinds of questions. Okay, so I hope this has made a difference. I hope the second half of the show has given you food for thought and has brought to maybe at least a point where we can all move ahead and move ahead in a way that is reasonable and that will provide a foundation for a new beginning. Okay, so the end of tonight's show is probably the beginning of something new that I'm going to be doing. will still have shows, but they may be somewhat different in context. Abating violence spiritually really requires that everyone look at it from a group way of dealing with it, even though they will grow and have to work individually as well, and sacrifice as individuals. Well, that's the end of tonight's show, and until